off the ball rugby.
He's a very good player, and on his day, he's a massive threat on the wing. So that is a bit of competition that we need at the left wing, with James Lowe not firing as good as he has in the recent past.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
You are very welcome to the latest episode of Settle In. Kathleen McNamee here with you. I am joined by cyclist Josephine Helian to talk about her career and life. Josephine, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to the very start. How did this whole journey start for you in cycling?
Oh God, it's a little bit of a lengthy answer, really, to be honest. I suppose, first of all, when I was first diagnosed, the NCVI, as it was known then, now known as Vision Ireland, they'd done a number of programmes kind of during the summer months and things. One of those programmes was actually tandem biking, and they used to get a group of volunteers with a group of bikes and just bring a group of community, bring a community of visually impaired people together, basically. And you just take turns hopping on, and you do a lap and you get off. And that was kind of the introduction, I suppose, into tandem cycling for me. And then I really loved it, really enjoyed it. And eventually, at the older age of 19, then they were trying to run this program again, and they were looking for volunteers. And they'd said that anybody that has kind of any interest, maybe continue it on a kind of longer basis, maybe to contact, to come to the meeting and maybe get contact with a local club. So that's what myself and my sister did, and did that for a number of years prior to, I suppose, the initial thing that started me into competitive cycling, which was my interaction with Francine Meehan, a bit of a local legend, somebody who'd been there and done that, got the jerseys. she kind of, I came to her attention through local people and kind of mutual friends, but we'd never met before. So she reached out to me and she offered to basically ride the bike and let me know if I was any good, first of all. which I was really excited about at the time. It was so, it was something that I'd like never knew how to get into or break into competitive tandem cycling. But So when I went out with her on the bike, and from that moment then she was like, yeah, you can basically take this as far as you want to go. And I was a bit like taken back, but at the same time I was like, tell me more. So then she offered to actually put me on a training program, which I'd done for that winter, and eventually done my first time trial locally in Athlone the following April. And then kind of broke out into international racing from that moment onwards. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah, it definitely sounds it. And so what age were you then when you first started cycling to when you were starting to look at the more professional side of things?
As in when I first started, like as an adult or younger?
Either.
Well, I suppose like when I was a child, I had a little pink mountain bike that I rode around the house at home. and it was actually when I was diagnosed first, one of my first initial questions, I listed 20 questions for my doctor. And he asked me to go home and not think of questions. And I came back in, and actually, I think it was the first one was, can I still ride my bike? which he actually told me no. so, yeah, I suppose I kind of rode my own bike up into my early teens, and then kind of got a little bit more scared or frightened of riding on the road, or yeah, it was kind of becoming probably a question of my safety rather than anything else. So I didn't touch a bike until I was like that. I'd done the kind of the NCBI program that they ran kind of later, and that was when then I first got in contact with the club. So I was 19 when I first kind of started riding bikes, and we had great crack with our local club. Like myself and my sister joined together. She's also visually impaired. And we had two consistent pilots, I suppose. I think she had a couple of different pilots, actually. But I had one kind of main pilot, and he's now 75, I want to say. Maybe that might be a little bit older than what he actually is. But he's in his early 70s. And but yeah, we still are in contact and like that. We loved cycling. And I suppose when I started like competitive cycling, I was 26.
It's amazing. Like, yeah. Quite the journey from 19, just starting out, to getting into competitive cycling when you were 26. And I assume that whenever you got your diagnosis and you were asking about could you still ride your bike, that tandem biking just wasn't something that had come into your sphere at all.
Absolutely not. Yeah, no, not at all. It wasn't even something I knew existed. And I don't think the doctor at the time even knew that it existed. So like that, his hope for me in terms of cycling was not very high.
Well, you've proven very wrong in your career that you've had so far.
Yeah.
So in that space between 19 and 26, was it a case of just not knowing that there was the potential for a professional setup, or was it time commitments? What was going on in that?
Me and my life personally, I was studying. So I was doing a PLC post leaving cert course after finishing my leaving cert. I'd failed maths in my leaving cert, and this was kind of my plan B, was to do a PLC course and then get into college kind of a different way. But also, I didn't really actually know what route I wanted to go within college, because obviously careers being visually impaired are kind of, I wouldn't say limited, but definitely, you know, I wanted something that would suit me, that I enjoyed doing, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I kind of thought a PLC course would kind of be good for me. So I was doing that, and then I went from there into Athlone IT, and that was the course that I did at was in Moat Business College. That was within business and administration. Mm. I then went on done the level 6 of that in AIT in Athlone, which is now something else. It's a TUS, I think, Technical University of Shannon is what it is now, but it was AIT at the time, and I went from there into a business degree. So I was studying. Me and my sister were both in college when we first started cycling, and it was definitely more of a hobby, kind of leisure. Mm. I like that. Competing wasn't really in my realm. I didn't even know Katie George and Levy's name at that time either. So, even though she had been to Rio during that time as well. It was just, it wasn't something I seen as something that was possible for me, I suppose, as well as that. I was quite focused on studying, and it wasn't something that came naturally to me. I had to work hard at it. So it did take hours. So I didn't really focus on anything outside of that. When I finished college then, I was looking for a job, and I actually, a job fell through here at home, and I actually went out further afield. I moved to Canada for 6 months, where I got working out there. But obviously the end goal was to come home and get work straight away. But I thought if I kind of got my feet under the table somewhere else, outside of Ireland, it would kind of give me a benefit on if I was looking for jobs here, which it did. I got a job straight away when I came home then, and that was in September of 2019. Then COVID happened and I started working from home, and like that, I hadn't cycled, I think, in 2 years, and then I kind of got back into the club. But that's when kind of I wanted to better myself, my health, my fitness myself. I kind of became more aware of I wasn't really doing a whole lot in that area. So I kind of wanted to get back in with the club and get back fit again, and feeling better in my body. And that was kind of the start of the journey. And I was just in a really good headspace, a really good position when Fran came into my life. I'd also left a very serious relationship that was very unhealthy as well. So I was literally on like this upward kind of positive part of my life, and I was just like, right, I'm in like a way better position now, and I was just a lot happier myself. So definitely when she came and approached me, then I was ready to hit the ground running with this. So,
and for people who don't know Francine and what she's achieved, like, what was it for to have someone like her come up to you and say, I want to see if you can make it?
I think it's funny because I still remember the moment she sent me the message. It was on Messenger, and I was a bit like, this isn't really Fran meeting. Like obviously I'd heard of her name because she's local, but she was a pilot for Catherine Walsh for years. They competed in London in 2012, and they got silver in London, and they had multiple world championship medals between them. And then they went on and did triathlon after doing paracycling. So, and Catherine herself as an athlete is unbelievable. She's done a huge variety of different sports and huge accolades. Like, she's just like, Fran is just class as well. So I was just, I suppose I was a starstruck at the beginning. I was like, oh, Jesus, like. but also I was like, well, sure, why don't we figure this out if I'm any good? I wanted to see that as well. But definitely, I like, even that first bike ride that I did with her, I was like, obviously wanting to be my best and show her that, like, I could be capable. And it wasn't until we got home that she actually said, like, yeah, we can basically go, sky's the limit kind of thing. And yeah, it was, I suppose it was a mix of emotions because obviously I'd heard about her. I'd never actually met her. And it actually turned out that I didn't even realise that she was living locally at the time because I thought that she had moved, well, she had moved away. So nobody really knew she was back. So yeah, when she had reached out to me, I suppose I was a little bit starstruck at the start. Definitely have huge respect for her as an athlete. She's class. So yeah, it was phenomenal to be coached by her at the beginning, and somebody like that, a wealth of knowledge. And every bike ride like that was just full of so much information. I was just trying to soak as much in as I could, and every single time I was like, just keep telling me more. She was like, I know I'm probably like over giving you information like here, but I was like, no, you're great, keep telling me. I'll pick up something out of it. So which obviously I did. So yeah, definitely a lot of knowledge there to definitely learn from.
And that's incredible. What sort of things is someone like that telling you when you're, like, is it when you're out on the bike together that you're having these conversations, or is it after the fact? And is it about form? Is it about speed? You know, what are those sort of conversations like?
A mix of everything like that. Like, initially I didn't know much about how to get into competitive cycling as well. So she was kind of telling me the processes that you had to go through in order to get classified, as somebody that's a visually impaired rider. So you have to actually go through like you have to go get your eyes tested in the round that they want you to get tested, which is very uncomfortable. and then they you go up and then they do another in-person where they do kind of a field vision test, which isn't very difficult, but it can be a bit straining. Yeah, I had no idea that there was all of these like hoops you had to go through. And then that was kind of just to even get kind of classified in order to get racing. Then there was a whole different realm of like, well, you're going to be in a hotel for a certain, I think she knew exactly, I think it was over 100 and something days, the year of Rio, where she wasn't home. So she was in a hotel for over 160 something days, I think, throughout the year. So she's like, you know, you do travel a lot. And like, I had no idea of any of this stuff. So, and then also then there'd be bits and bobs about obviously speed, nutrition, the different types of helmets. I had no clue of any of this. Like, this is all new to me. The different types of shoes that riders wear. So it's just like, even the bikes and the equipment, like Catherine Walsh had her own bike, obviously. And that was something that was a big investment that needed to be got at the beginning. So I own three bikes now, really. So it is a bit overwhelming, but at the same time, I was just so excited to hear and learn more. So yeah, there was a lot to take in.
Would you have counted yourself as a competitive person before entering into that arena?
Definitely, yeah. I don't like being told I can't do something. And like that, quite often I find that my expectations of myself is like way greater than most people. So some people would be like, you know, they might look at somebody that's visually impaired, be like, they'd never be able to do X, Y, or Z. But like, I don't see it like that at all. So it's
rightly so.
Yeah, it's a different type of perception. But yeah, I definitely want to be the best.
Did you feel the step up to competitive cycling in terms of your body and what you had to put it through to get to that level of, you know, competing at world championships, or obviously with the end goal of making it to the Paralympics?
Yeah, and I probably dragged my body through times where I probably wasn't ready for it. at the initial stages, but I think that's how also you make gains. So, I knew like that as well through talking with Fran as well, the expectation that you have to give it everything. And I suppose like that, she kind of seen that in my personality and was like, yeah, like, you know, you'll be fine. And you'll live. my heart, but you'll live. so I think, and like that when I got selected for the World Championships in 2022 to ride with Linda Kelly, Fran actually facilitated myself and Linda training together because we hadn't ridden a bike together at all. I think we'd done like a 3-day camp with Linda in France, and we got on the bike, we got measured up together, we kind of did a couple of bits together. And I knew it was going to be really tough going to Canada and racing with Linda, somebody who had never like ridden a race with before or anything like that. So I'd raced in Belgium that same year with Clare Ní Rochtagán, and she was brilliant as well. And even in Belgium, she actually ended up getting food poisoning the day before the time trial. So,
not ideal.
But like that communication was kind of key in that time, where we just kind of talked through things, and I was like, okay, well, you need to tell me if you're not okay. We're getting off this bike if you're not okay, because you know, I don't want basically her collapsing and ending up in a ditch somewhere or a wall. But yeah, she was fab as well to ride with at that time too. So I'd kind of learned from that experience as well about like that, and we did get to meet some of the others. We got to meet Eve and Katie and the other riders as well. So we kind of, I got an even bigger insight as to like where they were at and like what they were doing. So that kind of showed me as well, like, oh well, I'm not doing too far out what I'm supposed to be doing, but at the same time I was picking up bits and bobs of what they were doing, like they were napping during the day and things like that, which is something that was completely new to me. then going to Canada at the World Championships, it's so funny because when I think back, there was actually one of our physios who was there. They were talking through walkie talkies on radios, and Neil was saying after the race that Mark basically was talking, and I think it was the second or third last lap, probably the second last lap of the race with me and Linda before we got the bronze. But he actually said on the radio, he was like, Josie looks like she's cooked. Like, I'd say my face was like red. but like that, we still got the sprint finish in and the chain came off, which was not ideal. But
yeah, I was going to ask you about this because I was looking into like the different bits of the bike and stuff so I could actually understand it. But like, how did you guys manage to get that sprint finish? Losing something like that from your bikes, the very crucial part.
The build up was kind of there, so it was actually a nice run into the finish. Like, it wasn't up a climb or anything like that. It was up a climb, we were screwed. But we did have a nice little run in. So, but Linda's pedals basically clamped, so they were just like, she couldn't move forward. So it was like me that was pushing left over the line. So, the actual. The dynamics of a tandem bike is funny because a lot of people will ask you some off the wall questions about like what does the pilot do? Of course they're pedaling. It's definitely a two person effort when you're on a tandem. If one person starts pedaling, you know all about it.
Yeah, you definitely feel it in the legs.
And it's definitely not the stoker pushing the bike and the weight of two people. That would be crazy strength. So yeah, it's definitely a two-person effort. Obviously, I don't have any control over the steering at all. My handlebars are basically dummies that I just hold on to. And we have a timing chain. So if Linda freewheels, I'm freewheeling, or if Eve is freewheeling, whoever's in the front, if they're freewheeling, we're both freewheeling. Mm-hmm. Now, I could try and push the pedal through, but she could stop me if she wanted me to stop, basically.
Okay.
Or vice versa, if she went to push through and I wasn't okay to push through, or for whatever reason, she would probably, like that, she'd feel me pulling back through the pedal. But obviously, there is a lot of communication on tandem, obviously, then, because obviously my sight isn't great. So where we are positioned in the race, like that, even in Paris, like Eve was telling me where we were at certain points in the race and what position we were in. Just to keep me updated on where we're at or how the race is panning out, basically. Eventually, through a long time of riding with somebody, you eventually actually get to know their body habits. Like, there would be times where Eve wouldn't have to speak to me. Like, I would know what she's going to do next. Like, I would know when she's going to basically go for a sprint. And that would be kind of half based on if we were communicating prior as well to where we're sitting or whatever. But even for Switzerland, even in Zurich, when she went, I just followed through. So the two of us went together. There was no actual verbal communication. But like that just comes with experience and riding together and getting used to one another. At the beginning, it can be a bit of a thing to figure out. But the longer you spend on the road with somebody, the more that you get to know their quirks and what they do, yeah.
We had Eve here a couple of months ago doing the series as well, and it was really interesting chatting to her about her experiences in the sport and the different times where she felt like maybe she didn't have the time to commit, or that she was absolutely 100%, this is the only thing that I can see right now.
Yes, yeah.
It's interesting you talk about that instinctual almost element and the communication that you have to have with someone else, because there's probably very few sports that you almost have to be that in tune to someone's body beside you and their body language and what they're saying. You know, rowing is something that maybe kind of comes into mind as somewhat similar, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, I like that. I suppose that's one of the things that really attracted me about tandem cycling was you weren't on your own. You were always like with somebody, and like that, my experience with my local club, it was always fun based. It was there was always a bit of crack, there was always laughter, there was always joking and messing going on, and like that, because my sister was on a tandem then as well, there was a little bit of competitiveness there between the two of us.
Just a little bit, I'm sure. Bit, yeah.
There was always a sprint finishing. But it was great crack, and like that, to have a partnership with somebody that closely too, like Katie and Eve have raced together for an awful long time, and they've come over some incredible achievements, but also personal things with one another and other people, and they've lived through like lots of things going on in their own personal lives together. So I suppose when they stand on a podium together, it's that bit more emotional. When you have that kind of relationship built with somebody, it really is. It's like a best friend and a sister all in one. But like that, there are probably times where you could probably throw each other off a bridge at times. You're just like, get out of, like, because you're so like you're like in this bubble. Especially like coming up to like a games or something big. Like it's a really pressure cooker type vibe. But like that, when you have like that built up respect and camaraderie between the two of you, it's a lot easy flowing, it's nearly like support, you know, you support each other through it, so it's a fabulous thing really.
No, it sounds amazing and great, as you say, to have that support in what is a very elite competitive atmosphere where you know you know the person beside you wants to achieve great things as well. You obviously made it to the Paralympics. What was the build up to that like for you personally?
It was so like a whirlwind. Like I was so like that my goal from the time that me and Fran started training in my shed, kind of doing things old school. There was no digital stuff at that time. It was literally guesswork nearly. But that goal at that time was Paris, in my head, and I think in France as well. It was definitely like all my passwords were changed to Paris. So like to actually find out then that I was selected then was just, it was like, it was so surreal. It was just class. And like that, to represent your country in a sport that I didn't even think I was ever going to be able to compete in was just phenomenal. Yeah.
That's incredible. And I know, especially when, you know, so many people start elite sport from a very, very young age and they eat, sleep, breathe it from that stage. But for you to have come into it at a later stage, I mean, it's weird saying your late 20s is a later stage, or even mid 20s is a later stage, but yeah, with the way of competitive sport.
Yeah.
What, like mentally, how did you adjust, I suppose, to the pressure of, okay, I've actually made it to my dream event. I am going to pull on that green jersey and I am going to fly the flag for Ireland. Like, did that sit easy with you, or was it something that you had to work on to make sure that it didn't affect your performance negatively?
I don't think it affected me. I think it was definitely more on the side of sitting easy with me. Like, I remember actually in the velodrome, because that was the first event we were doing, was the kilo. And it was like, I actually, Jamie was walking over with me and Linda to the area where you like sit down before you walk up to the side of the apron. And I actually said to Jamie, I was like, hey, coach, I'm about to be a Paralympian. He just looked at me and was like, yeah, Josie, yeah. But that was just so cool. And I even just then, I was just like really just happy to be there. And I just wanted to embrace that. And yeah, I stepped on the track with a smile on my face for that reason. And I think at that time as well, I kind of just said to myself, like, I've ticked every box that I possibly could to get there. Mm. So like, try and just enjoy this. And my sister and my brother-in-law are actually there as well in the velodrome watching me. So, and Billy, my initial pilot, and my sister's kind of most constant pilot, Colin, they were both there as well. So it was, yeah, it was cool. It was definitely a cool experience to be able to have gotten there. Yeah, and I definitely felt proud in that moment to have achieved that.
And then how did you find the games in general, you know, the actual competition element of it?
Because like that, I kind of just found with cycling, it was literally, we were like from start to finish nearly of the games, because the road race was like one of the last kind of ones to finish up. I think the triathletes were after us, and they were the only ones left. So it was only us and the triathletes. So it was cool watching everyone else finishing up, but like that, you're like still in the mindset of your competing mode. So, and like that, the road race for me was like, that was the one where I was potentially going to medal in. So that was like the biggest focus. And I think like that, like part of the reason why he was riding with me in the first place is that there was no kind of, like obviously Katie was going for gold and that's what Katie wanted. But with me, it was like I was new. So there was like not a huge amount of expectation. But like, we were sitting in the room and she just looked at me and she's like, we could actually like medal here. And like, I was like, yeah, that's kind of the plan. If we can get there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was, but like that, there was just like, there was no pressure as such. Well, apart from the pressure I put on myself, there was no pressure from anyone else or outside pressure. There was, I think as well, like my family were just so happy I was there. So, even to get there like was an achievement. So, but like that, of course, I wanted to medal. But it's just, yeah, I think every race I go to, like all I want to do is want my best. So like, the Paralympics was no different in that sense.
Mm. And you talked about Paris being your big picture goal before you're going to it. Obviously, yeah, it's over now. It was an incredible experience, but yeah, has those goals shifted? You know, are you looking to the next Paralympics? Are you, yeah, you're like, LA, yeah, here I come. I'm already on the road.
Training focus has slightly shifted. So this year, well, I suppose coming into Paris, it was like there was a couple of times where my sprint power was like quite good. But like we obviously, endurance cycling, you're not focused on sprint powers as much, but if the natural leaks are coming up, like that's good. But yeah, I think me and Evan Holdenkamp kind of did a sprint on the back of the lads wheel kind of coming down a hill, like that. She just decided to do it, and I just followed through. And the numbers looked good, and I remember my coach saying to me, like these are really quite good numbers, kind of. Like because we hadn't done a whole lot of progress or a whole lot of focus and training on that stuff, he was kind of like, that's kind of interesting. Just note that. I was like, okay. And then Eamon Byrne, who was obviously a Paralympian and a pilot for Martin Gordon in Tokyo, he actually said, since he saw me on a bike, he was like, oh, she's a sprinter. So on a track bike. But yeah, so this year, I suppose, when I did my whole winter's training last year, endurance base, even at the start of this year, that's what we were going with. But like that pilots, they were looking for pilots, but it wasn't looking like there was anyone coming forward that was kind of suitable. So then in March, we did a road camp, and I did it with a really nice woman, actually. She, the Australian girl, Rachel Nealon is her name. She done training camp with me in March. And she, like that, she wasn't actually available this year for racing or anything like that. She just volunteered to help me. It was actually Fran that set that up as well. got me in touch with her. So she done that with me again, like that. She was just another person that I could learn some stuff from. And she's a really nice girl, but she just wasn't available for racing. So, like that, Jamie kind of said to me at the end of that camp that basically that it wasn't looking like road racing was going to happen for me this season. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. And then he's like, on the other hand, this might lead us an opportunity to maybe try and lean into this sprinting thing a little bit. And I was like, okay. So he's like, yeah, I might just throw you on a program there and might just capture the progress and see what happens, basically. So I was like, okay. He's like, they think physiologically that this would suit my physio, can't say the word. So yeah, he put me on that program then in April, I want to say, and then I think 2 weeks later we did a call, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'm keeping you here." I was like, okay, because I was like immediately making progress.
How did you find it yourself? The swap?
Different. Like, it was hard actually initially, and I've kind of just gotten my head around the whole thing, because in my head, like, endurance was like where I was focused at, and I like made an investment, got a custom bed bike for Paris especially, and that's where I kind of thought the future was going to be. But yeah, I suppose like that, like Jamie was saying statistics to me and talking about bits and bobs, and I was kind of like, okay, yeah, but I suppose till you see it, then you start to realise it. So I got paired up with Derb Library. She's a really good, really nice girl, lovely person as well. And she's been training with me now since, I want to say, May time, on Sundrive here. But like that, Sundrive is like one thing, but you can't compare it to an indoor velodrome. So it's kind of like, you know, and statistics and numbers and stuff sound good, but I don't really know in like what that looks like in an indoor velodrome, or what kind of times are leading into, or, you know. So it was kind of a hard picture for me to get around. And then the whole training aspect is just so different, because like you're talking, like my hours have decreased, but the type of training is just, it's really high intense stuff. So it's still noxious, but it's not as time consuming as the endurance stuff. So the fatigue is even different. And then the diet is different. So, and I just felt like I'd gotten into a proper groove with my nutrition. So it was like flipping it on its head a little bit. But at the same time, it's something new. I'm a really adaptable person. So I was like, okay, sure, I'll give it a go. And like Jamie's like, look, if I was to put somebody that's a diesel type engine on this type of a program, they're not going to make the gains that you've just done in the space of time that you've done. Like, it's crazy. Like, so he's like really excited, and then they're going, okay. myself and Darvla got on an indoor track there 2 weeks ago, and now I can kind of feel what it feels like a little bit, and I'm beginning to get excited myself a little bit. So yeah, we'll see what next year brings. But yeah, It's exciting, but it was definitely challenging to go from one to the other, even the mindset of it.
An interesting journey ahead.
For sure.
Josephine, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been so lovely chatting to you and hearing about your journey, and best of luck with the Paralympics as well. I hope that we're talking to you in a couple of years' time and there's another medal in the bag there for you, or a couple more medals in the bag along the way before then even. Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 00. That was Josephine Hillian talking about her career in cycling.
Settle In on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00.